Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to What is Etiquette Anyways, the talk show where we are making the world a polite place to live. We discuss a variety of topics and always enjoy interacting with our listeners. You may join the conversation live by calling 516-418-5894 or email your questions or comments to missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. You may join the conversation live by calling 516-418-5894 or email your questions or comments to missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. Now here's your host, John Maxwell, certified speaker, 25 plus years, master trainer and coach, Miss Donna.
Welcome to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. This is Donna, and today is Sunday, October 9th, 2022. We are broadcasting live from the wonderful city of Atlanta. Welcome, welcome. This evening, we will be talking about racism and its impacts and how we can establish some peace, okay? Once again, welcome to everyone. Since the name of the show is What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show, I always want to answer that question. Of course, it would be proper etiquette to do so for the new listeners. And etiquette is simply a set of rules of behavior, and by using these rules, people make living with each other more pleasant and comfortable. Now, isn't that what we all want? I mean, I would think so. I know that's certainly what I would like. The word etiquette comes from an old French word meaning ticket. It later came to mean a prescribed routine, especially of court behavior. Now, who we have to thank for this is Charles I and II, because what they did, Charles I and II of England, actually, what they did is they copied the rules of etiquette from the French court. These rules became requirements of behavior everywhere. So kudos out to Charles I and II. Once again, we are going to talk about racism. You know, it's something that needs to be talked about. You know, have you experienced racism? Have you experienced even classism or sexism or any of the isms? That they are certainly worthy of having this discussion. And you can certainly join the conversation if you'd like. 516-418-5892. Again, 516-418-5894. I apologize for that. It is 516-418-5894. I am going to bring on my co-host. First of all, he is certainly no stranger to our show, as he has co-hosted many, many, many times. And I want to check on him and see how he is doing on this wonderful Sunday evening. Pastor Williams, how are you this evening?
I'm fine, thank you, and I hope that I'm coming through loud and clear.
You are, and happy Sunday to you, by the way.
and to you also.
Thank you. So glad that you were certainly able to join this evening, as we are going to certainly be talking about a very, very important topic. And, you know, a lot of people have dealt with this and are in the process of dealing with it. And we just want to kind of shed some light on it. And then, you know, at some point, just kind of talk about how we can, you know, establish some sort of peace, if nowhere else but within ourselves. And of course, you know, I thought the idea came to me. Of course, we speak with Dr. Megan Saunders, who we're going to bring her on momentarily here, who hosts the Forgive Her Health conference every year. And after the conference, it's generally World Peace Day. They also host a World Peace event. And so I, you know, was a part of that event, and I just heard so many comments that were just so impactful. And that's why I wanted, you know, to make sure that we had an opportunity to speak with her and some of the panelists. I know that you also are involved with this ministry as well. And so we're certainly going to talk about this. I'm going to go ahead and grab Dr. Megan Saunders and just kind of bring her to the forefront as well. And we'll see how she's doing on this wonderful Sunday evening. Dr. Megan, how are you?
Good evening, Donna. I am well. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am just happy Sunday to you as well. And so glad that you are able to join us, as I know that you had the, it was the 6th annual Forgiveness for Health conference, is that right?
It was actually your 5th annual conference. We're planning the 6th.
It's the, okay, that's
yes,
what
yeah,
I'm thinking, well, speaking that into fruition already, huh, with the 6th year. But, and guys, I know that a lot of you have heard Dr. Megan Saunders before, but I'm going to go ahead, Dr. Saunders, for those who may not, they may be listening for the first time. Would you go ahead and share something about yourself and your organization with them in case this is their first time, you know, listening?
Donna, my name is Megan Saunders, and I serve as founder and executive director for Forgive for Health Ministries in Stone Mountain, Georgia. We are a 501c3 organization, faith-based organization, dedicated to improving, helping people to live with a forgiving heart. We use or integrate forgiveness into everything we do, whether you've seen me in the clinical setting or you've seen us in the community setting, actually assess forgiveness, and we help people to start and help them through the journey to forgiveness. One of the things we've realized years ago was that many of us are dying with the burden of unforgiveness because we've chosen to not let go of something that has hurt us in the past. And so what we do is we come alongside people, whether at work or a church, in a mosque, a temple, it doesn't really matter where they are, family reunions, I've been there, to just help people to realize that when you walk in unforgiveness, it's like you're drinking poison and thinking somebody else is going to be hurt, but you're really hurting yourself. So we help people to come to be open, transparent, and to face the issue that caused the hurt, and then help them through the process of forgiveness using a model we call REACH. So we work in several spaces, and we offer a conference. The World Day of Peace is also a celebration we do. And then we run Friday evening adult programs called RT and Forgiveness, and we do a kids program on Saturday morning and several other events as, you know, the Lord permits. So we are excited to be here in Stone Mountain, but we have a global footprint and just happy to help people to get over the hurts that they have faced in their lives. So that's just a little bit about me. In my other life, I work in public health, been doing that for 42 years, And so I integrate health, not only the public health side, but clinical forgiveness into the clinical side of my work. And so that's just a little sliver of information about us. Very small staff, but we have a very big vision of helping God's people to be free of the burdens they're carrying. So that's just a little bit about us. Thank you.
Absolutely, and thank you for that. And if you would, just talk about your vision for a moment for World Peace Day, because I know this is not the first year that you hosted this event as well, and I know that you're very passionate about, spreading peace and talking about peace. And of course, racism was one of the major topics that was discussed. And just kind of how did you come to select? And of course, I know it definitely surrounds a lot of a lot of people that have been impacted by racism are sometimes certainly dealing with unforgiveness because blatant racism. Even. And so just, real quickly, how did you come up with the topic? What was your thought on addressing specifically the topic, I guess, of racism for World Peace Day?
Well, I like to say first that United Nations World Day of Peace was started in 1981, and each year the day is dedicated to strengthening the ideas of peace through an observation of about 24 hours of ceasefire. So this is a United Nations event, and each year they have a theme. And this 2022 theme was End Racism, Build Peace, which I found to be pretty ironic because I've, my whole life for the last year has been looking at racism, structural and other types of racism, and helping, especially in the workplace, tell people to have some equity in what they're, how they're treated. And so when I saw the theme, it immediately resonated with me because it's in alignment with a lot of the ideas and principles that I have. I espouse as a person, but also as a part of my work, as a part of my work in the community, and as a part of somebody who's lived with racism for years. It was just a hot button topic that I think we needed to talk about. So I was happy to see it at the United Nations, and it shows definitely that there's a global issue with racism. And so for us, we decided in the U.S. to do a very small celebration to sort of honor, work along with our brothers and sisters to sort of put back the blinds to show people what's going on in this U.S. in the United States with racism, and then talk a little bit about how do we get through that to peace, because it's very difficult. And it's like the more I talk about it, the more experiences I have. In fact, I was on my way here to my vacation spot and had another very blatant racist thing happened to me. So it's there. In long time ago, people would be, it'd be very more overt, but it's still very rampant because it's a structural issue. And we see it whether it's in the clinical setting, whether you're going to a gas station and treated differently, or you're going to the doctor being treated differently. So racism is rampant. And so to answer your question, the theme was chosen by the United Nations, and we agreed with that process, and we did our own celebration in the U.S. for this. So I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does. And it was, such a very impactful conversation and celebration as well. And I know Pastor Williams, I'm going to pull him back on just a moment because, I know that he has a lot of experience with talking about and discussing this topic, and it's especially from a spiritual perspective because that is very important as well. So, Pastor Williams, just wanted you to kind of chime in with some of your opening thoughts, if you would.
Well, with respect to the topic of racism, it is a... How would we describe it? It is certainly a problem for our community, for our state, and for our nation at the present time. It is something certainly that has been with us for a long period of time, and only in the last 50 years have measures been taken to first recognize it and then secondly to counter it within our own country. And I can recall the very first time I personally experienced that when I was 9 years old and rode on a train with my family to the South. I was raised in California and hadn't experienced directly any racism, but we took a train to go visit my father's relatives in Texas and in Louisiana. And when the train reached El Paso, my father told me, he said, "We have to get off here and move to another car." And I couldn't understand what the need to get into another car was for. And so as we were walking the length of the train from the Pullman cars up to the very front of the train, I asked my father again, I said, "Why do we have to change cars?" And my father's answer was, "That's the way they do things here in the South." And we kept walking till we came to the car, the very first passenger car on the train. But it was distinguished from all the other cars because it had a sign on it that said colored. And that's the car that we had to ride in for the rest of the time that we were in the South. And that was my introduction to the racism in a very outgoing way. And during my time in the military, I experienced it. And so the one thing that I can say that is a hope today is that first of all, it is being talked about. There is a general consensus that it is something that should be dealt with and overcome. And from a spiritual standpoint, there is increasing activities within the respective Christian denominations to implement measures and steps and education in order to help people recognize the dangers of racism and how to combat it and to overcome it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to say that, you know, racism, like you said, it is something that we should discuss. And not discussing it and pretending it that it is not relevant is not the way to go. And I say that because I was working with a group of youth probably a couple of years or so ago, and there were a couple of young people in there that told me that this person who was their, you know, their youth coordinator, I guess you could say, basically said to them that, you know, well, they opened up their hearts and, you know, was explaining how they felt about some of the racism and the discrimination that was going on at their school that affected them in particular. And so they were told by a leader, a minister leader over this group. And this gentleman said, and was the entire group was of color. And the leader of this group was a white male, and they shared with me that he said, "Well, if you don't talk about it, you won't have to worry about it." So that was an issue for me for the simple fact because, no, it's not going to just, you know, automatically disappear, you know, by osmosis. You know, it's something, especially with young people, if they're, you know, able to communicate that, then it needs to be simply addressed. And as we've said, you know, yes, there's discrimination and racism in the workplace, certainly in the school system, various fields, medical fields, in the teaching field, I mean, just about every field. And so what I want to also do, I want to bring into this conversation Ms. Betsy Rodriguez. She certainly has had, you know, certainly it has experienced this type of racism as well. And so I want to bring her on and just kind of see how she's doing so far. And hi, Miss Betsy.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me, Cloud?
I can. How are you? Yes, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me again. So happy to talk with you again.
Yes, thank you so much for, you know, making time to be with us. I know that when, in particular, when as part of the peace celebration, I remember specifically hearing you speak and you shared about, you know, some of your experiences that, you know, blatant experiences that you had actually experienced. And so I would just like for you to, you know, start wherever you would like here to just kind of, well, first of all, for those, because I, audience, I apologize, I just jumped right in. But for the benefit of those that may not have heard you speak when you all were on, as you were talking about the conference, I would like for you just to kind of give us a little backstory, a little information, whatever you'd like to share about yourself so that our audience can, you know, feel as though that, okay, we know who she is.
Thank you, Donna. So my name is Betsy Rodriguez. By training, I'm a nurse, and I'm also a certified diabetes educator. And I have been working in public health for more than 25 years. I'm also a pastoral wife for 47 years now. And we together are working in our small ministry that is called Tomando Café con el Pastor Dr. Borges, drinking coffee with Dr. Pastor Borges. We have a live stream on Facebook on a daily basis from Monday to Tuesday to Thursday. He deals with the Bible and Christian talks and studies and stuff like that. And then on Fridays, I take care of the health. So this past Friday, I was talking about depression and how depression could be managed at the church level without putting labels on people, or you know, we're talking also about the many myths that are related with mental health and stuff like that. So that's what I am doing, and that's who I am. In terms of racism, Donna, since I came to live in the United States now for 30 years, I have experienced tons of what is called microaggressions and also a lot of racism. And I have many stories that I would like to share with you. From healthcare providers to supervisors to coworkers to people in my neighbor, you know, in so many ways, I think that all of us have experienced some sort of racism. For example, the first time that I went to a dentist, this is a funny one. I was sitting waiting for him, and then he suddenly came and started yelling at me, saying to me, do you speak English or Mexican? So he was yelling at me. And I looked at him and said, what are you yelling at me? I can hear you perfectly, and as you can see, with a strong accent, yes, I can speak English. Actually, Mexican is not even a language. So, you know, those things that happen to you. People sometimes, when they hear an accent, they start talking to you loudly. And I don't know what is the relationship that many people may have in terms of when they hear an accent. So they think, I don't know, that we might have hearing problems. I really don't know. I cannot figure out that yet. Then in work, I remember one day close to Christmas, I came to my office. And then I found this box on top of my desk. And I said, what is this? And it was a Rosetta Stone. And I said, Rosetta Stone? I didn't ask for this. And then suddenly my one of my bosses came and said, "Oh, that's a Christmas gift for you, so you can improve your accent." And I said, "Oh my Lord, I'm wondering if you same gift of order here that may have stronger accent like me, like people from India, people from China." And she was looking at me, "Oh, I thought you would be pleased." And I said, "Why I should be feeling pleased if I have no intention of changing my accent? This is who I am. I'm a Latina. And I have been doing my best to learn the language, but I have no intention to get rid of my accent. And I don't see that you and me are having any issues of communicating to each other right now here, or are we?" And she said, "No." So then, thank you, but not thank you. And, you know, I have so many stories, Donna, that I just decided to forgive, because you cannot live in letting that those things, you know, bring bitterness to your heart. I have to say also, Donna, that the most racist date of the week in America is Sunday. People divide themselves by the skin of color and then go to church to supposedly worship the same God. They do this even though history, geography, tell us that Jesus wasn't blonde, with blonde hair, blue-eyed person. Most people living in the areas where Jesus lived, even today, have dark skin and hair as wood. But still, many Christians claim that Jesus, you know, Jesus was white. And the distinction is a hard one, because it's designed to make many people of color feeling that we are inferior, because if the Son of God is white, then he must be better than me. And then we are infusing these kind of thoughts in our children. And it's so sad when I see kids having these expressions that it's coming from the parents. And what made me sad is the fact that we are supposed to be worshiping the same God. We all have been created to his own image. And we are supposed to be in his eyes, be the same. But we don't, we preach one thing, we do other stuff. And that to me is really sad. In my opinion, racism continues in the churches, because many people in the churches don't read the information outside the Bible. The church in America lives by the letter of the Bible and not by the Spirit. Churches in America are too busy encouraging obedience for the congregation, but not encouraging their congregations to seek the love of God. They sit in the huddle, church of services, hearing about God's plan, but they never break the huddle to run God's plan. They wait to be told what to think and what to do, while resistant churches steam from believing in the God of America rather than believing in the loving God of the Bible. So I decided to live and to love the loving God of the Bible, and making sure that my daughters and my granddaughters and my son and everybody that is close to me, my family, are actually doing what God is asking us, to love our neighbor more than we love ourselves, regardless of the skin color, regardless of the accent, regardless where they're coming from. We have to infuse those thoughts in our children so we can have better generations. And I do believe that one day we will be able to worship in the same group, having no distinction among us. At the end, we have been created to his image. And his image is perfect. At least that's what my mama told me.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing. And guys, in case you're just joining us, you are listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. We're having a conversation about racism and whether it's blatant racism in your face or whether it's a little more, you know, subdued. But you can certainly join the conversation as well by calling 516-418-5894, 516-418-5894. And we are going to take a quick break. We're going to come back to our panelists, and we're going to also start picking up some of our calls, okay? So once again, we will be right back in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Hey, guys. If you have children or know someone who does, listen up. Miss Donna has worked with youth and parents, building confidence and self-esteem for over 30 years. She is a John Maxwell Certified Master Level Trainer and Coach, as well as a Certified Disc Trainer. Since numerous parents have asked Donna for advice regarding their children and teens, during this challenging time, she is offering special coaching sessions right now. Participating in these sessions will help your youth to become more inspired and motivated during the pandemic and beyond. Testimonial. Sarai Blue says, Miss Donna's training motivated, uplifted, and encouraged my children, ages 5, 9, and 15, and they are excited and feeling confident again. If you are interested or know someone who is, quickly go to www.missdonnaspeaks.com. That's www.missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. Click Coaching, then Contact, and complete requested info. Or send an email to missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. Hurry. Space is limited.
Hannah Michelle's dream was to become a published author by her high school graduation date, and she did. Beautifully Imperfect by Hannah Michelle is a book written by a young girl navigating her way through life and expressing her emotions through her poetry. This book addresses topics that we will all experience, such as acceptance, racism, and grief. Beautifully Imperfect was written to remind readers that although life has its trials and tribulations, we are all indeed beautifully imperfect. Go to Amazon.com, type in Beautifully Imperfect by Hannah Michelle to secure your copy today. Again, go to Amazon.com, type in Beautifully Imperfect by Hannah Michelle and secure your copy today. We are all beautifully imperfect.
There's something you can do right now that will ease the pain of arthritis in years to come. By remembering the Arthritis Foundation in your will, you can help us find ways to stop this serious, often crippling disease, a disease that affects one in every seven Americans. Call the Arthritis Foundation at 1-800-283-7800. 1-800-283-7800. It's time we took arthritis seriously.
Welcome to ProMixGlobal.com. ProMix Global will help solve your audio recording and production needs, whether it's song recording, mixing and mastering, CDs, commercials, IVRs, audiobooks, or general voiceovers. ProMix Global is the choice for you. Your project will be delivered on time and on budget. For additional information, or to schedule your studio time, go to www.promixglobal.com. Once again, www.promixglobal.com.
Hello, everyone. Do you want to be inspired and encouraged? Listen up. I want to tell you about a new and exciting book called My Forever Affirmations Book and Journal, Positive Thoughts for All Ages by Donna Paige Riley. Have you or someone you know ever struggled with low self-esteem or self-worth? Been bullied? Felt like giving up on something that seems too hard to accomplish? Get nervous about taking a test for school? Feel like quitting? Feel self-conscious? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you will want to purchase a copy of My Forever Affirmations book and journal. My Forever Affirmations is a book and journal of quick, to the point, powerful, encouraging, positive thoughts and poems that will keep you encouraged no matter your age or what you're facing. There's also room to write your personal thoughts. We all need to be encouraged in positive ways, don't we? After reciting these affirmations, you are sure to feel good or better about yourself. You will be encouraged. Hurry, order now. Copies are limited. Go to www.amazon.com. Type in My Forever Affirmations by Donna Paige Riley. Again, go to www.amazon.com. Type in My Forever Affirmations by Donna Paige Riley and secure your copies. You'll be so glad you did.
You are listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. You may join the conversation by calling 516-418-5894 or email your questions or comments to missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. Now back to the show.
Okay, we are back, and we are talking today about racism and its impact. And so I'm going to start picking up some of our callers. We have our prestigious panel here that we've been listening to. I will identify you by the last four digits in your telephone number. You will know at that time that I am speaking with you. 4826, the last four digits, 4826. Hello. Extension 4826. Okay, they may be just listening. We're going to keep moving here. 5963, the last four digits, 5963. Hello. Last four digits, 5963. Hello. Okay, so they may be listening as well. We may circle back if we have time. I want to go back and bring back on Dr. Megan. And again, of course, Dr. Megan is the founder of Forgive Her Health Ministries. And I actually got this idea from listening to their peace celebration of really talking about this. Dr. Megan, I know that you were talking about you had mentioned, of course, that, you know, we see racism in different areas. Let's talk about for a minute racism, just maybe give us an example, if you would, of a form of racism, say, in the medical field.
Thank you, Donna, for that question. I'd like to maybe give you an example that was just on the top of my mind, because yesterday I had a conversation with a friend. She was told that she had an issue with her white blood cell count. And as she dug a little deeper, she realized that what she has is something, it's something that's termed B9 ethnic neutropenia. And what it means is really, it's very common in African American, people of African descent, and that means their white blood cell count is lower than the American standard or the white person. And so because the white blood cell count is lower, but they're not sick, people are being investigated, they're sent in for many, many tests. And this disorder, which is not really a disorder because it's actually a standard that's very common in African countries and something that most of us or African descent actually has this. But when you come and you're being investigated or seen in the U.S., it's considered a disorder. So it's really when non-whiteness becomes a condition, is a really good article that describes this issue. So sometimes we go in, for instance, there's this issue, whether it's the neutrophil that's low, which is called ANC, that really is not an abnormality, but because you're using an American standard to measure what the blood count should be, then it's considered a disorder, if that makes sense. The issue, so what this does for Africans is that it actually helps them to fight malaria. And so if you go all the way back to our roots, many of us came out of Africa. Many of us have this condition. So somebody sees it in the doctor's office, and your standard is that you should have X amount of neutrophils per liter of blood or whatever it is, the measure is. So you're comparing the person to the white man's blood count, and because of that, it's now a disease or a condition. So that's just one of many things. In the medical system, so that's one. The other thing we know as a fact is that African-American women are maybe twice or three times as likely to die giving birth in this country than the poorest white person, and only because of how they're treated, because there's so much rampant discrimination in the health systems that there's a poor quality of health given to people who are not white. And so what we have to do is that we have to educate our clients, our brothers and sisters. We have to advocate for them so they can get better health care. And sometimes you actually have to follow them to the doctors. And we have engaged community health workers in some places across the country so they can actually follow somebody to the doctor, so they can actually speak up for them. Because the treatment you get depends on who you are. The American health system has nothing called equity in it. So those are just some examples. Now, I work in public health, and so I have gone to the doctor's office, and, you know, I'm just, you know, treated like any other black woman. It's disregarded. But I go in with my name badge from my office, and I'm seen differently, and I'm treated differently. And I shouldn't have to have a badge, or I shouldn't have to show you my checkbook for you to treat me differently. So we know that the health system in this country, the way people are treated, it's not, there's no equity in there. And just some of the data that I shared at the conference is, you know, just this one just blew my mind, and I'll share this one here. About 21% of first-year medical students believe that blacks have a stronger immune system. So what that means is that they don't think they need to act when somebody is sick. They'll give maybe want to give them less medication, and that can cause somebody's life. So if you're walking into medical school, you already have this bias. Give yourself 5 years. We don't know what that percentage will be. So what we have to realize is that these things are implicit bias that people have, and that we have to then equip ourselves. So when we're going in, we come with a list of questions. We're asking for tests that we know we should get based on our conditions. So we have to educate ourselves. And when they push back, you push forward and say, no, I understand from X, and I've even told patients, go in and tell them that you talked with Megan. Megan saw you and she suggested this. And you'd be surprised at things that people will do if they hear that somebody who knows something or works somewhere has given you that advice. And so we have to equip people, because many are dying in the health systems in this country, but nobody will say that, of course, because it's a litigator society, and we are, you know, predominantly, we are black people, or minorities, or people of color. So those are just some examples, and I just expand on that as well. And Betsy also is a healthcare provider. I'm sure she could give you horror stories. But I've had to empower my patients to go in, to demand tests. For instance, with diabetes that I work with, and I tell them, before you go, you take your shirt off, take your socks off. And it'd be surprising what they say, the reaction to the doctor. And I said, have them check from your feet all the way to the top of your head, because diabetes will damage every single cell of the body. And most times people will have a bump, which in the next minute they're getting an amputation, and nobody saw it, because they don't tend to ask you to do that. So just simple tips like that, and empowering people, making sure that they follow these tips, can help to save people's lives. So those are some thoughts right now for that question. I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. That's excellent. And empowerment, yeah, that is crucial, you know, because the more that you are empowered, the less you are intimidated. And often that's, you know, one of the major issues is we become intimidated because we may not think we know, you know, as much as we should or as much as who we are interacting with. So I really certainly like you with saying, you know, it's crucial that we are empowered. That is very important. In case you are just joining us, You are listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. We're talking about types of racism and the impact. And, of course, and I believe, you know, racism is just a form of superiority. Most people that are, you know, feel as though you're not as good as they are, that's generally a spirit of superiority. And so we certainly want to recognize that and call it what it is, because that is basically what it is. Anytime that you think that you are better than someone, and because of, you know, you may speak differently from them, or you may be a different hue or different shade from them, that makes you better. And that's just not, no, that's so not acceptable, but it's certainly, you know, a lot of what we certainly do deal with. I want to also bring back on Pastor Williams. I'm sure he has some additional comments that was swirling around in his head right now, too. And so I want to bring him back on as well. How about that, Pastor Williams?
Well, I would like to add to this that I'm encouraged by a new ministry that has come into existence here in the Atlanta area, which is called One Race. And One Race is being used to educate the Christian community in Atlanta about the prevalence of race, and especially within the church, and how that the church should be taking specific actions to counter this and bring about a sense of oneness and love as put forth by Scripture. And so this group has been in existence now about 5 years. They've held some significant events at Stone Mountain and at Piedmont Park, and have taken groups on trips through the South to visit the civil rights historical points. And again, their goal is to bring about an understanding of the reality of racism and how it is counter to the teachings of Christianity, and endeavor to bring them to the churches to a point where they are taking actions, promote love and fairness and equality among people, and to overcome the vestiges of racism that have permeated most of the denominations or Christian organizations in the country. And again, we as Christians have a responsibility to promote good order and love and respect for all people. And certainly that teaching is found within the Bible. We are to love one another. There is no basis for exerting superiority over others or groups because of their race, but rather, as the Apostle Paul says, we are all one in Christ Jesus. And so therefore, we need to be the leaders within society here in the United States to promote that reality, and the first step is through education.
Yes, thank you for that. And yes, I am familiar with that organization as well. And yes, they are certainly doing good work. And I wanted to mention a couple of messages that I have. And one says, regarding going to doctor visits, make sure you pray and take Jesus with you. That was one comment. Here's another one. It says, Miss Donna, our family moved to the suburbs for better schools, but my children are dealing with discrimination and racism. They are in middle and elementary school. As younger parents, how can we address this issue? And this is from Sarah and Mike in Alpharetta. And so who would like to, I'm just going to refer this question back to our panelists and see who would like to actually address this. And this is very, you know, this is very, very common. We feel as though we need to move out, you know, further out because the schools are better. But I think sometimes we don't necessarily think about what the impact will be on our children. And this is certainly a great example of that. So who wants to take that and just kind of respond to that real quick?
Go ahead, Megan.
Okay. Who was that Megan or was that?
That was me, Betsy.
Who was Betsy? Yes. Okay, Betsy, you can go ahead and let us know what you think about that.
Well, you know, we have lived the same situation with our granddaughters. And I think that the way we address it as a family is having family conversations around the issue, explaining them how life sometimes it is like that, explaining them what racism entails and why people come from that point of view, and then teaching them how to be assertive but not aggressive, how to be able to call the things by the name and be able to communicate the feelings to the teachers and the counselors and things like that. And then we, as the family of the adults, we have been taking measures, you know, for having conversations with the principal, having conversations with the counselor, demanding to have some conversations with the with the children in general at school about racism and the impact that has on other children, and how we're different, yes, we are same in the image of God, and things like that. So it was not an easy situation to manage, but a lot of education and a lot of love and a lot of advocacy efforts and a lot of strength and a lot of knocking on many doors, we have been able to overcome that. And it's something that is not going to be resolved. At least it was not our case in a blink of an eye. But finally, it was resolved. And my granddaughters are able to have a healthy environment at school. But it requires a lot of effort and more than one people. As you know, you need more than one to build a village. And certainly when it comes to racism, it requires a lot of funds that have to be dealt at the same time, so your children won't be hurt. But most important, we have been working at home for not allowing them that the bitterness of racism resides in the heart, so they become the same as their aggressors. So we have been teaching them the fruit of the Spirit and what are the consequences when you are against the fruit of the Spirit. So it's a situation that you have to work with your children, you have to work with the system, you have to, as I told you, there are many fronts that you have to deal with, and it's not an easy situation to work with, but certainly a good one. At least in my case, I have been working really hard to infuse in my daughter, in my granddaughters, to live according to what God is expecting from them, regardless of the aggressions they're receiving from others.
Yes, very good. And also, this also proves as well why communication is so important. And certainly communicating with your children. So it sounds as though that this couple has certainly, you know, been communicating with their children in order, you know, for them to have determined that these children are dealing with some forms of discrimination. And that's why, you know, it is just paramount that we must communicate, and then, you know, also communicate with the, you know, the teachers and the counselors, like you said. So thank you for that. I didn't know if anybody else wanted to jump in. I'm going to try to get another caller in as well on the conversation. And let's see. I'm going to go with the last four digits. It's coming up 1111. Last four digits. Quadruple 11. Hello.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing?
Hi there. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Thank you for calling. What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show? We're talking about racism. And what was your comment?
Yeah, I wanted to address the last question, which I thought was really interesting because it's, you know, it's always been a tough thing to deal with. Like, you go back to integration, where children were kind of pushed to the forefront of the fight, where they had to go into these schools and kind of deal with the trauma, you know, on a daily basis. And, you know, at this point in my life, I've come to the idea that if you discover something like that at the school, it's best to just scour the internet for a private school that has much better rankings as far as diversity and doesn't have those racial issues, and put your children there. Like, I get the point of, you know, going to the counselors and talking to the teachers and trying to, you know, reshape the environment that they're in. But to a certain degree, how much do we owe to our children where we just say, you know what, why should my children have to deal with this and fight this fight over here instead of me saying, no, you people have some work to do on yourselves. And I'm not going to have my child be the so-called teacher or the person who is supposed to soften your hearts. That's work they have to do. I'm responsible for my children, not the student body that clearly is, you know, out of order over there. So that was my comment.
Well, actually, that's a very excellent point. That's a very excellent point because, you know, I mean, the bottom line is, you would certainly want your children to be as comfortable as possible. And, you know, if it cannot be resolved with a conversation and, you know, it is, you know, you're knowing and realizing that it is a heart issue and it is a heart thing, then you have a very, you know, you have a very valid point. And I thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you, ma'am. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Bye now. And so, so you have been listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. We're talking about racism. We've had a very good conversation, very interesting conversation with our panel. And I thank you all for certainly calling to join the conversation. You're always welcome to do that. And, you know, I know that we're not able to get to everyone, and I do apologize for that. And this is definitely a topic that we will certainly revisit. We will be doing a follow-up on this. And I did not even, you know, really take the opportunity to share. I certainly do have some stories. And one of my major stories is when I first moved to the Atlanta area. I was a little shocked, if you will, with the situation that when I wrote my first book and I had submitted proposals to some of the media and to some of the television stations, and just to make a very a long story short, I had actually spoken with this producer. She called me probably three or four times as it grew closer to the time I was going to appear on this show, and this was a morning show. And with the book, they had no idea, you know, I did not have an actual photograph of myself in the back of the book. And so, you know, she was so excited, and she told me how long we would have on that particular segment. I think it was like 12 minutes. And this was a show. It's no longer on the air now, but it was running live. And so I took two children with me. to demonstrate different types of, etiquette. And so I will never forget when she came into the lobby that morning, all of the guests were gathered, and I was the only guest of color with my two children, the two students that I had taken with me. And so I'll never forget, this producer came in and she, called the roll, and she was making sure that all of her guests were there. And so when she called my name, she said, Donna Paige Riley. And, I kind of waved at her, and, and she looked over at me and she turned her head and she repeated my name again. And so I did the same thing. I mean, there were several people in there, but, I kind of raised my hand like, I am she right here. And so she looked at me like, oh, no, you aren't. So I guess she felt, well, they didn't have a second thought at this point, because when I had submitted my package and my book, typically Riley is Irish, okay? And, it had been discussed so many times, and you still hear it in, I guess, racist type conversations, that if you want to hide something from black people, put it in a book. So therefore, it was kind of, difficult to really understand that someone black could have actually written this book, especially on this particular topic. And so, listen, she never came back out. She sent her assistant producer to come back, and the assistant producer actually took us and placed us in a holding area. And so by this holding area, there was a group of children from a children's museum, and there were about seven or eight little elementary school age children. They were all white children. And so they were on a practice stage. And so they were practicing, so that once they were in front of the camera, they would be comfortable. So we kind of watched this. And so the two children that I had with me, one was 6 years of age and the other was nine. The male was nine and the little girl was six. And so, they're watching these children. They can see them as they're practicing. And so they asked me, they said, oh, are we going to get a chance to practice too? And I said, oh, yes, of course. And so what actually happened is, after they finished, I asked the assistant producer, I said, well, my children have an opportunity to practice as well so that they're comfortable. She said, oh, no, you'll be going on in 90 seconds. I said, okay. And so, again, to kind of shorten the story, I mean, it really bothered me when it happened, is when we actually were being interviewed, as we were walking out, Justin, the male child, we were going to talk about, phone manners and communication, that kind of thing. But as we were walking out, they had a phone ring. Now, they didn't say anything about having a phone ring or anything like that. However, he was just on it. He said, oh, hello, this is Justin. How may I help you? And she was like, oh, wow. And so, we went on to do some improper manners and then demonstrate proper manners so that they would know the difference. And so the talk show host said to me was, she said, well, I believe children should always say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, no matter what, and when they respond. And I said, well, actually, I said, as long as they say yes or no and do that respectfully, that would be perfectly fine. And she said, oh, no, I think that they should always say yes, ma'am, or no, ma'am. I said, they're at liberty to say that if they'd like. However, saying yes or no to a response or a question that they've been asked is perfectly fine, opposed to, saying uh-huh or hunching their shoulders or so on and so forth. And so once again, she said this again for the third time. Well, I believe that that's what – I said, well, basically, you know what? What we're talking about is proper versus improper. I said, however, I believe when you're saying that they must say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, that is Southern slavery mentality at its finest. And I said, once again, proper etiquette does dictate just to simply respond respectfully to the question, and it can be yes or no. And so she decided to move on at that point. But this was certainly a teaching moment. Of course, you know, after the show, I did speak with the children about this, and I, you know, spoke with their parents so their parents can further the discussion. They saw that they were treated totally different than the other children that were able to practice and so on and so forth. They also saw and understood that, you know, even the associate producer, she never came to interact with us, not one time. And so, you know, children are very bright, and they saw what was going on. And I was disturbed mainly for them. I mean, that's not the first time I've experienced personally racism, probably that blatant, however. But my concern was more for them. And so what I did is I also, since the assistant producer did not have anything to say to us except you're going on in 90 seconds, and the producer never came back out. Our time was cut, I think, to about 4.5 minutes from 12 minutes, and we were going to do a live Q&A. That didn't happen. But I knew exactly, you know, what occurred. I knew exactly what happened when she did not come back out, because she was busy in the back resetting the lineup of her show. Okay, so I already knew the deal. But anyway, I did at the time, I wrote a letter back to the station manager, and he had this producer, you know, give me a call to apologize. But then she said, well, I just don't understand why you thought it was really, okay, I was born at night, however, it wasn't 4 or 5 nights ago, okay? But, you know, and I mentioned to her, you know, it's just not so much for myself as for the children, who actually had to, you know, be faced with that. And so, yes, I just certainly, you know, wanted to share that, but, you know, that wasn't it. But it is certainly, you know, racism runs rampant. And so we certainly do want to be in touch and in tune with our children and teach them about it as well, because it is a fact. You know, it does actually occur, and it does actually happen. And guys, thank you all. I know we have run over with our time. I certainly do appreciate you all staying on. And I think we may have one additional. Let's see. I see another caller here. Let's see. Extension 4821. Last four digits, 4821. Hello. Last four digits, 4821. Okay. Extension 5963, last four digits, 5963. Hello? Okay, perhaps they are just, they're just listening. So no worries. Again, so thank you all so much for listening. I will go back to Pastor Emmanuel, who was co-hosting with us this evening, to see if he has any final comments he would like to share.
Well, I would make the comment that I had the pleasure of coming into the Army shortly after it was integrated in terms of they did away with all black units and did not make assignments to black units mandatory as it had been. This was in the early 1950s. But there was still a lot of attitudes left over from that period of time. The Army was segregated from the end of the Civil War up until the early 1950s. And President Truman was the one that signed the executive order supposedly integrating all Department of Defense activities. But each of the branches, the Army, the Navy, the Marine, had their own time schedule, so to speak. and many of them dragged their feet until the Korean War started. And then in the midst of the Korean War, it became obvious that there was a shortage in white units, and there was just the opposite in black units. And so when the commander of the 8th Army raised this question, he says, why is it? And they said, well, because you can't sign blacks to white units. He says, well, I'm going to change this. And he wrote Department of Defense and said, in view of the personnel needs that we have, I'm going to begin signing people regardless of what color they are. That was the real first practical application of integration within the armed forces. That was in the early 50s. But there was certainly a transition period and certainly attitudes of people who had served in the segregated services were still present and would raise their head ever so often. And so it really wasn't until after the civil rights activities in the 60s that the Department of Defense took a real hard look at race relations within the services and took some very stringent actions to ensure that they were dealt with, and there was an equality among the service people with respect to promotion, respect to disciplinary action, and things of that nature. And I'm glad to say that the armed forces, and specifically the Army, was one of the first institutions in the United States that really took this thing head on and had put into place policies and procedures to promote equality. Not that it's perfect and not that everybody did it, but the procedures were put into place, and so they have made great strides over the last 100 years in terms of race relations within the military.
Wow, thank
and
you so much.
Educate, and there are times when it's not just words that have to take place. Procedures and practices have to be codified and put in place in some instances in order to get the ball rolling and to make people aware that this is a situation that has to be changed, and if necessary, pass the necessary laws or institute the necessary regulations to enforce it. And I, again, say that the military is one example of where that was done, and it has turned out very well.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing. And I did receive a message about why I believe that they cut my time down. And, the reason I know why they cut the time when I was on the television program, which was supposed to, it was a live program where I was supposed to do some Q&A, because I knew that once they saw that I was a young black female, they weren't going to, you know, have a young black female teaching their wealthy white housewives how to teach their children how to have manners. That's exactly what it was, you know, because she had told me initially, and I believe she may have forgotten or she never even thought about it, what the when she first talked about or proposed doing the show, she told me about the demographics of who watched the mid-morning show. And basically she said there were the wealthy housewives that, you know, stayed at home. So I already knew that. So, yes, so thank you for certainly asking that question. And I certainly meant to include that because that, you know, that kind of put the icing on the cake. So that's why I already knew for the simple fact that, you know, when I would go to do different workshops, they did not know, you know, that I was a woman of color, and I would walk up and say hello, and I introduce myself, and they would just, you know, have a, like, a deer in headlights. What? So, but yeah, but anyway, but guys, listen, I thank you all for hanging with us. I know we stayed over a little longer, but we certainly want to discuss this, and we will certainly be discussing this again. And it would be only, let's see, I do want to go ahead and go back and just to see if any of our other panels had some words that they would like to share in closing. Betsy, did you have anything you wanted to just kind of share in closing?
Well, Donna, I think that your story it's one that I was just here listening, and I don't know how many times I have been going kind of through the same situation that you have been going through, like for mm-hmm. in an airport waiting on the first class line and then calling the people that is after me, and then like if I am transparent, and then when I ask and I say, oh, you were waiting, well, yes, I'm here.
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just that treatment, and you were defining right at the beginning racism, and you said that it's the feeling of, the feeling of superiority, and that's exactly what it is. And it is so sad that we have to go through all of these challenges and hurdles, but I also think that it's always good to take the time to do those teachable moments that you were talking about before. I think they were very needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always, as a grandmother, always looking for those teachable mothers also for mine, so they learn how to communicate in an assertive way rather than on aggressiveness. That's what I am mm-hmm. I am teaching them. There is a difference in between being assertive and advocate for your rights and being aggressive. And what is God expecting from us in every single moment, which are always the fruit of the Spirit, nothing else.
Absolutely. That's good, because we are all His children. We are all
exactly.
His children. And when we are all cut, we bleed the same color. No matter what our color is, we all bleed the same. And so, Dr. Megan, I'm going to let you also, if you have any closing comments that you would like to leave as well.
Thanks, Donda, for having me. I think, everything that everybody has said is correct. Racism is a system of structuring opportunity and assignment of value based on a construct, a social construct of race. And it unfairly advantages some and disadvantages others. And so what I think, if I had to summarize all of this, is that we are all God's children. We are part of the human race. And 99.9% of our genes are the same, except I have a little melanin, makes me beautiful. And I think if we start valuing people and realizing that God made us all equal and that they deserve to be treated with equity, with respect, and that you wouldn't want you to be, we have to also develop radical empathy for each other. How would you like to be treated as a black person if you were white and start thinking about how that person feels? We have to continue to educate people. We have to continue to advocate for changes. And as Pastor mentioned, we have to make practices. But we also have to have policies that be implemented to stop this. So when I go into a doctor's office and you're racist and you treat me differently because I'm white, I'm tracking you, I might be recording you. I mean, I don't care what it takes, but I think we have to all work to dismantle racism so that we all are treated equally, because we're all equal in the sight of God, and you're no better than me, and I shouldn't be slaughtered in a store. Or on my way here, I was, unfairly treated at a gas station. I pull off to buy gas with my card, and I put it in 3 times, and it just said, something came up and said, go to the cashier. I'm like, okay. So I go into the store, and it's this long line, Orlando, and very long line. I go to the end of the line, and I finally get my way to the top. And I said to the gentleman, does your card machine not work? Oh, no, the storm's knocking them all out. Now, behind me, there are 3 other guys. And by the time I had gone out there, those 2 guys had already gone. They had no problems with their pumping of gas. But I did. And I noticed several other black people going into the store. And I went back in and I said, well, you know, I had no idea how much gas I needed, so I need to get a refund. But I'm so curious that the other guys who came behind me, you know, because there's a two-way pumps, and I'm watching all the others that are white, had no problem with their card. Might it be that you're racist and you treated me differently? He started putting his head down. So I said, and you're telling us here with your sign that I need to friend you on Facebook and put something good about you. What would you like me to put? The truth? That you are racist here? So I will never stop here again to buy gas. So I think we also need to put our monies where our mouth is. If I go into your store and you follow me and treat me like dirt because I'm black, I'm not spending a dollar with you again. And I think we need to all do that and start having them feel what it means to have the dollars in our pockets, and because we're demanding respect because we deserve it. So those are just some thoughts I have. Would love to talk more. I have mixed race grandkids and don't want them to be treated unfairly by anybody. But it's important that I also educate them like Betsy does her grandkids, but they have to stand up for themselves. But as you know, the gentleman talked about taking kids out of school, but this follows all the way to their doctoral degree. And if you're a black person going through that, you're going to be having a more difficult time than if you're white. The system, it's a structural system, and we have to take it down like we take every mountain, one rock at a time. And so whether, hopefully somebody tonight heard this, and whether you're black or white, just remember that we're all God's kids and that we have to be empathetic to each other and that we all belong to the same human race. And if we do that, and as Betsy said, make sure we're generating and acting and behaving, following the fruits of the Spirit, the world will become a better place. Thank you, Ms. Donna, for having me. And have a good night. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Very well put. And yes, we will absolutely be entertaining this topic again, because we didn't even have even a chance to talk about colorism. And when you mentioned, Dr. Megan, that you have mixed race children, that the first thing that came to my mind is colorism as well, because that is huge as well. And so, you know, we didn't talk about sexism, classism, but all those isms, you know, we deal with. And so, you know, we want to be able to discuss them and to deal with them the best way that we know how, and with peace. And of course, you know, you definitely want to, I always think of making sure that you remember Matthew 7:12, which is, you know, treat others the way you want to be treated, right? Treat others the way you want to be treated. And Dr. Megan just mentioned some of that, but it's just very important, you know, to do that, have empathy for people, and just think about if you were, you know, in their shoes. But yeah, it's just an ongoing, this is an ongoing conversation, and how do you deal with it, and how to, do you arm yourself, you know, mentally and emotionally to be able to deal with this. So again, you guys, thank you so much. I certainly do want to applaud all those who participated this evening. I certainly do appreciate it. This can be sometimes a very challenging, you know, conversation to have, but it's one that has to be had, you know, and has to be addressed. And again, everyone, thank you for joining us. If this is the first time, we thank you so much. Welcome to the What is Etiquette Anyway family. Of course, we thank our loyal listeners who tune in each week. We are so glad that you're part of the What is Etiquette Anyway family. If you have a question or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss as well, please feel free, you know, to let us know. We'll be more than happy to see what we can do about making that come to pass. We appreciate it, of course, when you tell your friends and family about our show. Invite them to listen as well. After all, our goal is to make the world a polite place to live, one person at a time, all right? Never tire of loyalty and kindness. Hold these virtues tightly. Write them deep in your heart. And that's a favorite Proverbs of mine. You've probably heard me say that if you've heard me even one time before now. That's one of my favorite Proverbs. And, you know, make sure that you initiate an act of kindness this week. And I know if we are intentional about it, we can really initiate acts of kindness on a daily basis. And I created a tool to help you remember to do that. And I'll let you hear that on the way out. Well, again, thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk again next week. And in fact, we're going to talk about the importance of voting, because we know we all have a duty to vote. So we're going to talk about why that is on next week, okay? Good night, take care, and God bless.
Are you a kind person? When was the last time you initiated an act of kindness? Did you know that genuine kindness is being nice to someone without expecting anything in return? When you are kind to others, it helps to make someone's day, and you will feel good about it also. Use the Kindness is Contagious Journal by Donna Page Riley to track kind deeds. Or you can use the 120-page blank line journal for whatever you'd like. Go to Amazon.com, type in Kindness is Contagious by Donna Page Riley to secure your copy today. That's Amazon.com. Type in Kindness is Contagious by Donna Page Riley and secure your copy today. You will see that kindness is contagious.
Thanks for listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. Please join us again next time as we will discuss another exciting topic.